Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we'll be reading a story called, I Took a New Class in College, Family 101. Please do not make the same mistake, by Trash Tia. A huge shout out to my patrons for helping make this episode possible, and I do hope you enjoy this story. Let's get started. In what I thought were my last moments, I remembered her. Detonation in 59, 58, 57, 56, 55, 54. It's crazy how your life really can flash before your eyes. Though I couldn't remember her name, I remembered her laugh, how it felt to smile, the contortions in her mouth. I remembered her feeling happy, sad, angry, scared, pain. I remembered her life. No, my life. Holy crap, you're in Family 101 too? I met him when I was buying coffee. I don't remember his name. Names, like everything else, are gone. There are only blurs in my mind that resemble faces and splinters of what could have been a voice. I've been told to write this as closure to myself, accepting my pain and moving on from my past. But the more I write, the more I remember. And, like a virus, it is slowly taking over me. The boy who had later become brother was the guy standing behind me whistling to himself, scrolling through his phone with the volume just a little too loud for 8:30. I'm told to visualize the memory like I am there, imagining each sense. I remember it was raining, and the smell of the rain comforted me. I could taste bubblegum in my mouth, and the slightest hint of chocolate pastry and stale orange juice. It was the start of the spring, and cherry blossoms were already blooming outside, petals dancing across the walk. There was a small local coffee shop off campus that did morning lattes with free sugar cookies. Not an ideal breakfast, but it was energy, and I needed it after barely sleeping the night before. The guy behind me who couldn't seem to stand still, bouncing up and down on his heels like a hyperactive child, wasn't helping. I was already highly irate, and it didn't take much to piss me off in the morning. The coffee steamer made me cringe, the sound of cups and silverware gritting my teeth together. The barista making my drink looked like she hated her life, which wasn't making me feel any better. She worked like a robot, her hands doing several things at once. The girl had light blonde hair hanging in her face. The shadows under her eyes were making me tired. College student, maybe in her last year. I thought about making idle conversation, but when I happened to catch her eye, she silently pleaded with me not to. I could kind of sympathize with her. I worked at my grandpa's coffee shop in Thailand when I was 14. Never again. Instead of striking up a chat and making her morning worse, I only offered a smile. My phone was already dying after I maxed out the battery doom-scrolling, and my headphones were in my bag. So I pulled out my class schedule. I thought I was hallucinating when I glimpsed it earlier that morning. There was one particular class that didn't make sense. It just appeared out of nowhere. I already knew my core classes and electives, so what the hell was Family 101? I called the college to inquire, but the woman I had been speaking to put the phone down on me. When I called again, I was directed to the dean's office, who, of course, did not pick up. So I found myself on my way to Family 101, whatever it was. I didn't realize phone guy was peering over my shoulder until he cleared his throat loudly. "Holy crap, you're in that class too?" When I twisted around, he nodded at my schedule. This guy looked like he just rolled out of bed, hiding behind a mop of sandy-colored curls. His trench coat immediately cemented him as an English major. I wasn't sure what was more pretentious, his style or the unlit cigarette hanging out of his mouth. The kid pulled out his own schedule that was neatly folded into a square, pointing to it like an excited kid. "Family 101 with Professor Hargreaves? I'm in there too, man!" I nodded hesitantly. "Yeah, room GH78? He responded with a grin. "It's a small world, huh?" Before I could answer, my order was called out. "Caramel latte?" Turning back to the counter, the barista was finishing up my drink, piercing the lid with a straw. But her eyes weren't on me. She was glaring at Mr. Pretentious. "No smoking allowed in here." Her voice was a little too monotone to be human. The guy inclined his head. "But it's not technically smoking." "Sir," the barista's smile was a little too forced, though there was a hint of amusement in her tone. "I said, there's no smoking allowed in here," She paused, folding her arms. Get rid of it, or I'm telling Mom. When I turned to him, the boy's eyes had darkened, lips curved around the cigarette. Wow, how old are you now? Like 25, and you're going to run to Mom? It's not even lit, dumbass. Unfazed, the girl took another order, maintaining her smile. Get rid of it. He scoffed. I'm 18 now, you can't order me around anymore. True, but you'll stop being Mom's perfect little golden boy if she finds out you smoke. But I'm not even smoking. She raised a brow. You're chewing a cigarette. The rules at home don't apply here, so you can't get your own way. Get rid of it before my boss has an aneurysm, or I'm telling Mom her perfect son smokes 50 packs a day. I sensed him stiffening behind me, losing his bravado. You wouldn't. I would. She's already suspicious. The guy rolled his eyes, plucking out the cigarette and stuffing it into his pocket. You're a little bitch, Bess. The barista, or Bess, straightened up, blowing a kiss. Love you too, AC. Ah, don't make it weird. Her gaze found mine, satisfied. Enjoy your drink. I found my voice, avoiding their sibling's spat. Thanks. I attempted to leave the store, but the guy stepped in front of me, blocking my way. Bess served another customer, maintaining a smile through gritted teeth. I noticed she was hitting the cash register a little too hard. By the way, Dad's birthday party is on Sunday, and yes, his new girlfriend is coming. If you don't turn up and leave me to deal with the Terror Twins, I'll burn you alive. The boy mocked a frown, inclining his head. Aw, Bess, I didn't realize you cared that much about me. His tone dripped with sarcasm. I mean, I would love to watch Mom and Dad scream at each other all day, but I'm actually busy. He stepped back, shooting her a grin. I made another attempt to sidestep him, only for the guy to stop me again, this time motioning for me to wait. I'll be okay for a while, sis. You'll probably never see me again. Bess didn't look up. The party starts at 3, she grumbled. I'll see you there. No, you won't, he said in a sing-song. I told you, this is the last time you'll be seeing me. Bess caught my gaze, her eyes rolling into the back of her head. If only. I heard that. Bess slammed an iced mocha down. You were supposed to, dear brother. The last thing I wanted was to accidentally insert myself in an apparent family affair. So, when I saw an opening, I grabbed my coffee and made my way to the door, only for Mr. Trenchcoat to follow me, swiping canned coffee from the counter. I'll pay for it later, he shouted over his shoulder, ignoring Bess's, I thought I was never going to see you again. Yo, Family 101, mind if I join ya? I guess I had already made a friend. Sure. I regretted my response maybe 0.1 seconds later. This guy would not shut up. So Family 101 sounds shady, right? Or am I crazy? It sounds strange, I commented. I wouldn't say shady, though. But don't you think it's weird? He said, the two of us pushing back out into warm spring air. The conversation started out fairly normal, only to devolve into conspiracy theories. Still, though, his company was better than being alone. Tuning out most of his manic muttering, I found myself smiling, reveling in a light breeze blowing my hair out of my face. Most of my memories are gone, cruelly torn away, but I still have pieces, splinters of a puzzle I've been piecing together. It was the perfect temperature, not warm enough for short-sleeve weather yet, but I didn't have to wear a coat. I remembered my coffee was too hot, scalding, and I took hesitant sips, immediately burning my tongue. I didn't even know his name. His accent was endearing, a slight English undertone if I concentrated. He jumped over cracks on the walk, already talking at a speed I couldn't keep up with, but it was refreshing. While he spoke in fast-forward, I took notice of his stripy backpack that was unzipped. Half of his books were hanging out. When he skipped in front of me, I zipped it up for him. Not that he noticed. I mean, I thought the name was kind of funny. Like, what? Are they teaching 18-year-olds how to make families now? He twisted around with his arms spread out, expecting me to answer. I just shrugged, sipping my coffee. The guy was already getting odd looks from commuters. I don't think he knew how loud he was talking. Yeah, exactly, right? I mean, zero of my friends have this class, and I've asked a lot of people in my dorm. Family 101 doesn't exist according to Google, and that is already a huge red flag. The guy cracked open his coffee and took a long swig and a breath, thankfully, his expression twisting like he'd bit into a lemon. Ah! When he politely covered his mouth before turning and spitting it out onto the sidewalk, I couldn't resist a snort. "Do you not like canned coffee?" I asked. "It's diet. Why didn't you get a normal coffee?" The guy blew a raspberry, taking another experimental sip. This time he didn't spit it out, but he did dramatize swallowing it. "Bess would do unspeakable things to it." He held up his can. "I would rather drink sewer water." I nodded slowly, following him across the road. I could see the campus ahead. It was smaller than I thought, a glass structure reflecting the early morning sun. "Bess, so that was your sister?" The guy shot me a look, his eyes narrowing. Ignore her. She was dropped on the head as a kid. I'm pretty sure Bess is running on half a brain cell. I laughed. "She called you little bro." The kid was stubborn, downing his sewer water coffee. "That's her official title, but I'm pretty sure Mom screwed a demon and out she came." I sipped my own lukewarm coffee. "Your family sounds interesting." I still didn't know his name, and yet somehow that was okay. The guy spluttered, though his expression darkened. "Oh, you don't know the half of it." He was squeezing the can in his fist, pulverizing aluminum between his fingers. "I have a helicopter mom who I just managed to escape. Dad screwed his 20-year-old assistant, and my older sister is the second coming of Satan." "Escape?" I managed to say in a breath. His gaze wandered. "Yeah, Mom's intense. When I was in school, she wouldn't let me date or even have friends. It had to be just the two of us." The boy sighed. "Mom hated Bess when she was little. Dad said it was postpartum depression and she tried to get help, except she had no bond with her whatsoever." He shot me a sickly smile. "It was different when I was born. Mom loved me and treated Bess like crap." His voice cracked a little. "When we were kids, it was always me who was getting toys and vacations to Disney, while Bess got nothing, so naturally my older sister grew to resent me because, in her words," he mimicked his sister's voice, "I'm the evil brother who took away her mom." Before I could respond, he sighed. "Bess can have her. That woman is a certified psycho, and I don't say that lightly about my own mother." The guy raked his fingers down his face, and I could see the mental turmoil in his eyes. No wonder this kid didn't want to go to his dad's party. "Mom locked me in my room when I turned 15 and refused to let me have friends. She tried to homeschool me, but Dad was against it, thank God. I had a curfew of 3:30 after school, and if I wasn't back on the dot, she would come looking for me and drag me back home." He let out a bitter laugh, and I found myself wondering why it was me who this stranger was pouring his heart out to. "I only managed to get away from her because of college. And even then, she tried to force me to get a job and stay at home. I had to wait until she was sleeping so I could move out. Otherwise, she would try and manipulate me into staying, and I would rather die than live in that house." I nodded. "Did Bess and your dad try to help you?" The kid surprised me with a laugh. "You're kidding, right?" We entered the campus building through automatic doors, and he stuck to my side. The interior was cozy. I appreciated the reception area filled with leather reclining chairs and the smell of freshly ground coffee beans. When I asked where our classroom was, we were directed up a flight of stairs. My new friend took them two at a time. "Bess thinks I was Mom's golden boy, and sure, I was on the outside, but I was also a prisoner in my own home." Reaching the top of the stairs, the boy didn't turn around, waiting for me to catch up. "My sister either didn't see it, or was in denial I was being treated worse than her." When I joined him, he surprised me with a smile. "And that is why you should never have a family," he mocked a bow. "Thank you for coming to my TED Talk." I offered him my own slightly forced grin. Noted. The last thing this guy needed was a class called Family 101. He needed therapy. The two of us were late to the class, immediately catching the attention of the professor, who was mid-rant. He was younger than I imagined, a 30-something-year-old man standing in front of a PowerPoint presentation. "Latecomers, please do not interrupt your classmates and find a seat, please. Thank you." The classroom was filled with students, and I squeezed into a seat at the front, the guy plonking down next to me. "As I was saying," the man paced up and down the stage, "people are not having babies anymore, or they are, but they're not in stable families. Birth rates are at an all-time high, but how many of those women are in real families?" The boy nudged me, chuckling. "Oh boy." "American families are dying," the professor continued. "Young people don't want to create a family these days. They want to travel the world or progress in their careers. You have your teenagehood to do that. Your child, it is for discovering your identity and who you are. He stopped pacing. Over 50% of young people these days choose to live at home with their parents to escape the reality of being an adult. You choose to bury yourselves in nostalgia, gaming, television, and movies to avoid entering the world of adulthood and starting a proper family. The others murmured around me, some in agreement, while the majority were laughing at him. He definitely made those statistics up. My friend rolled his eyes, leaning back in his seat. This guy is a certified nut. I do agree. 50% was overkill. The professor was unfazed by the reaction. I mean, a real family. A mother and a father and their children. Most American families are broken up and divorced. The children grow up with an unstable mother and an absent father. The mother is usually a teen parent, and the father left them because he couldn't bear the responsibility. Out of touch, freak! Someone shouted in the audience. What if we don't want to have families? A girl spoke up. What the hell are you trying to say? Yeah, another girl joined in. It's not the 1950s anymore, weirdo. A boy stood up, cupping his mouth. Who gives you the right to tell us what to do? We're adults, aren't we? The professor folded his arms stubbornly. Sit down, he ordered the boy, who slumped into his seat. Okay, let's do a small exercise. I want you to raise your hand if you are pursuing becoming a YouTuber or an online influencer. Looking around, nobody did. The professor pursed his lips. Okay then, raise your family if you are pursuing a career involving the internet. This time half of the class raised their hands. This is exactly my point, the professor stepped back. You are the next generation who will take control of our country, who will be expected to make choices, to look after our children and ensure we continue to be great. And yet your brains are rotting. You only care about likes, followers, and engagement. You've been brought up on the internet, brainwashed to crave the luxury lifestyles thrown in your face. He stepped forward. When you should be building families. Ouch. Should we go? My friend whispered, knocking my shoulder. We should definitely go, right? Unless you want to listen to Mr. Patriot crying about teenagers having minds of their own. Why should we make families? A girl behind me spat, breaking the silence. I didn't even feel safe going to school. Another stood up. Why should we do what you want when you failed us and will continue to fail our hypothetical children that you so desperately want? To my surprise, my friend joined in. Get off the stage, man. You're embarrassing yourself. Ignoring him, the teacher cleared his throat. All right. His piercing gaze found my friend. Raise your hands if you have grown up in a broken family. Something seemed to snap in the boy's expression. His arms shot up, as did everyone else's. I found myself torn. Mom did leave me when I was 12, but it was because of her mental health. She couldn't cope with having a child. But I was still writing her letters and visiting the wellness center she was at. Still, though, that meant Dad was never home, and I brought myself up. With a heavy heart, I slowly held up my hand too. Professor Hargreaves was visibly satisfied. You were all failed by your own parents, he said. Wouldn't you like to build a family to make up for your own abandonment, your own trauma? Don't you want to raise healthy children who will go on to make a difference? Make our country proud? Damn. I shared a mutual smirk with Mr. Trenchcoat. I was half expecting the Star-Spangled Banner to start playing. Though, there was just silence. Before, a guy laughed. Dude, you need help. He jumped up, offering the professor a two-fingered salute. Kids suck. Besides, I'd be a crap father, so no thanks. The entire row followed him, grabbing their bags. Then my row, I stood up to, but my friend pulled me back down. When I turned to him in confusion, I noticed he was trembling, his cheeks sickly pale under overexposed light. He dropped to his knees and I followed. The doors, the boy hissed out. They're locking the doors. He was right. When I lifted my head, students were already protesting, pushing their way to the exits where a scary amount of guards were congregating. The main door was blocked. Sit down, the professor ordered. If you do not take your seat, you will be considered ineligible for the Family 101 program and will be dealt with accordingly. I crawled back into my seat, the boy following suit. No, he whispered. I don't think we have a chance. I found my voice. To what? He squeezed his eyes shut, grasping for my hand. The name of the class. I repeat, Professor Hargreaves said. If you do not take your seat immediately, You'll be considered as ineligible for the Family 101 program and will be dealt with accordingly. When a girl suddenly dropped to the ground, nobody seemed to notice. But then the guy in front of me dropped to his knees, then his stomach. I didn't notice as blood was spraying my face until my vision blurred. Another girl tipped sideways. The entire front row went down like dominoes, and yet I stayed perfectly still. I could feel red warmth slick on my face, dripping down my chin. Pieces of skull dotted my desk like cat's teeth. In the long, dizzying moments between watching my classmates' brains being blown out and realizing I would not be getting out of that room alive, I was forced to my feet. I was still covered in blood. I could taste it on my tongue, and it didn't make sense how and why there was so much. Reality didn't make sense, and I don't think I wanted it to make sense. Sound came in waves, bleeding into me and then fading out. Screams slammed into my skull. Students dropped into their seats, their eyes wild. I was half aware of being violently dragged backwards, grouped with the girls, while my friend was pulled back and forced into line with the boys. The professor told us to stand still, and we did, while a swath of black surrounded us, guards. They poked and prodded us, forcing us to line up like cattle to the slaughter. 12 of us were dead, the rest of us prisoners. I remembered absently wiping slick red from a blonde's cheek. Oh, I thought dizzily, so this was Family 101. I forgot how to think straight after that. The world became a playground, and my mind was cotton candy. I was on my knees on the classroom floor, and then I was standing in a large white room with the rest of the girls. We were allowed to shower and dress, and that's the last time I remember coherently thinking. When I was dragging a scratchy sponge across my skin, watching a stranger's blood swirl around the faucet, I picked up the shampoo bottle and peered at it through soaking strands of hair glued to my face. No tears. I wasn't crying, and the shampoo didn't sting. No tears. I laughed, a hysterical bubble of giggles escaping my mouth. Tears. I began with my scalp, ripping out clumps of my hair. The shampoo bottle said no tears, so why did I want to tear off my own skin? Why did I want to drown myself under the spigot and escape the white? I scrubbed my skin until my arms were bleeding, until I dropped to my knees and clawed at my legs with my fingernails. There was so much blood, so much of him painting me, scalding my skin, and I didn't even know his name. When I tried to claw my eyes out, a female guard resisted me. First, they took my identity. This is where I would tell you my name, but I don't remember it. Every part of me, every piece of her was wiped away. The girl who liked bad horror movies and wanted to be an artist. Inside the room with pale blue walls, that girl's body and mind was twisted and contorted into me. They tore away my ability to cry, to scream, to beg for help, forcing metal rods into my skull and twisting until I gave up my name through a cry that begged to die. They forced me to give up the names of my family and friends, replacing them with names I did not know yet. But as the light flickered above me and time passed slowly, I stopped screaming. I repeated the names I was told to say when I didn't speak fast enough. I demanded to be punished. When the electroshocks stopped running up and down my spine, my body no longer belonged to me. I did not have feelings of pain when the back of my head was cut open. I did not scream or cry or beg to die. Instead, I lay very still while they hollowed me out. When I joined a long line of girls under fluorescent lights, we looked the same. Dolls with perfect faces and ponytails, dressed in light pink dresses. We were sisters. They told us how to smile, how to present ourselves. If we didn't smile, we were replaced. If we relaxed our expression or showed emotion, we were deactivated. The topics we were allowed to discuss: cooking and cleaning with our mother, and our favorite book from book club. When one of us stumbled, she was dragged away and replaced with another. I stayed in a single white room with a pink bed and a stuffed toy I named Ace. On choosing day, I was given my new parents. I was Sunny Fairview, 16 years old. I enjoyed reading books, listening to the radio, and helping my mother clean the house and cook dinner. My favorite book was Paradise Lost. I wore a bright yellow dress and a red ribbon in my hair. Mother smelled like raspberries when I hugged her. Father shook my hand and told me I was already the best daughter he ever had. Brother joined us soon after. He was taller than me, brown hair slicked back, wearing simple jeans and a checker shirt. When he first hugged me, he smelled of singed flesh and his brain was leaking out of his nose. Brother was dragged away after failing to announce his name, his lip wobbling. "Wait," he whispered, blinking rapidly. I don't understand what's..." When his eyes rolled into the back of his head, Brother was promptly fixed. He came back an hour later with a wide smile. Freddie Fairview, 16 years old. He enjoyed football and working construction. We lived in a small suburban neighborhood. Our house had a white picket fence and Freddie and I liked to play in the yard. I read books and listened to the radio in my bedroom. Freddie played football. Friends were my favorite. We had Eggs Benedict for breakfast. The target knelt in front of me, threw up his arms. "Please," he whispered. "I didn't do anything." Father shot him square in the head, and I lowered my gun, tucking it into my dress. Freddie, following Father's orders, plucked the man's eyes from his skull. We were ordered to hand him both of them. The Fairview family were never told any other information, except our target and location. Luckily, the second target was at the diner while we were tucking into our breakfast. Father used his charms, as usual, while Freddie and I stayed on standby. I held the rest of the customers hostage while Mother finished her orange juice. When the target tried to escape, Brother intercepted him at the door, easily dodging his attacks. The target was desperate, but Brother was fast. With not much effort, Freddie Fairview was holding the target in the air, his legs dangling. Mother continued to eat her breakfast, slicing into her sausage. "Careful, son of mine," she hummed. "You don't want to cause a commotion now, do you?" Brother blinked. "No, of course not, Mother." She nodded, swiping at her lips with a pink napkin. "Put him down, please." Brother dropped the target, and Mother calmly stood up, took out her polka dot colored pistol, and shot him point blank. When the target's eyes were in our possession, Mom laughed. "Well, kids, now wasn't that a lot of fun?" She swiped blood from her face with her napkin, and Brother and I resumed our places at the table. I ate my ice cream, and Brother slurped up chocolate shake. The Fairview family were not supposed to acknowledge the people who came to clean up the mess. We just took orders. Mom clapped her hands together. "Who wants chocolate chip pancakes?" I grinned. "I do." The Fairview family were just your average American family. This time, I was running barefoot through splintered glass. It was pitch black, but my body was on autopilot. The woman I was chasing twisted around and shot three rounds. Each of them missed, clumsily zipping past me. I dived onto her back and with a twist of my wrist, sliced her throat open. Then I stuffed my hand down her throat, acquiring the target, a rolled up piece of paper she had tried to swallow. Every week I had my daily checkup. I had to sit in a white room and allow a masked man to prod at my right eye. "Name?" I said the same thing every time, straightening my chin.
"Sunny Fairview."
He prodded the back of my head. "Any other names?" I shook my head.
"No, sir."
When he prodded my head again, I felt it. Pain. The world erupted into confusing color and I let out a shriek. "Alyssa! Alyssa, can you hear me?" Static in my brain, like a radio being tuned in. "Just your average all-American family." That's what we were. We went to the park and had picnics. I helped Mother cook dinner. She was going to help me make chicken pot pie. Just like every... "Alyssa, I know you can hear me." "Other. All.
Please. Damn, wake up."
"American.
I've got it."
I forgot what color looked like. Blinking rapidly, I found myself sitting in my bright pink bedroom. Pink. It drowned me. My whole room painted a pretty shade of pink. Brother was sitting cross-legged in front of me. He was painted in red. There was red on his face, red on his fingers, red on his clothes. It was everywhere, and it didn't suit my usually perfect brother. The red didn't make sense. It was alien and wrong. Brother leaned forward. He'd carved into his own eye with a knife. There was something glistening between his fingers. So much vibrant, slick. So much vibrant red, slick and warm, dripping.
"Alyssa?"
Brother pried my right eye open, peering at me. In a flash, I saw a stripy backpack, warm red seeping from my nose.
"Can you hear me?"
The world blurred, static in my head, but this time I could feel the gravel on my bare toes when I landed. 3.1, And 3.2, stay where you are. The voice screeched in my skull when I bounded forwards. The Fairview family has been compromised. Deactivate. I dropped to my knees, my brain sizzling. Wait! Brother put down his weapon, throwing his hands up. What would be the point in deactivation, huh? Don't you need us? 10. Professor Hargreaves, brother spat. Show yourself. It's the least you could do before getting rid of your mistakes. 9. 8. 7. Preparing to self-destruct. 6. 5. 4. I really liked his stripy backpack. His. 3. Stripy. 2. Backpack. I woke up dead. No, alive, but I might as well have been dead. Hey, I think this one is still alive. When I opened my eyes, color was distorted. I was tangled in a pile of bodies like doll pieces, twisted arms and legs and torsos without heads. I didn't feel fear. I was just numb. The face peering down at me was a woman with wide eyes, dark hair scraped into a ponytail. Her expression was gentle. Can you tell me your name? When I tried to drink in my surroundings, she shook her head firmly. No, hey, look at me. She gripped my chin, forcing me to look directly at her. Sweetie, can you remember your name? Sister. The woman's name was Miri. She introduced herself as a survivor of the Family 101 program. Her friends search Family 101 neighborhoods for deactivated models and take them in. There are 15 of us, and neither of them are brother. I wanted to go to the police, but Miri was insistent I didn't. The police are aware of and are funding the Family 101 program. To protect deactivated survivors, I have to stay quiet. Over the last few months, I've been working with Dr. Michaels, who is helping me remember who I used to be. I know that I had a mother who left me, and I wanted to be an artist. That's it. The rest of me is sister. Miri told me to report any strange instances, though. I'm not sure how to tell her. Last night I was sitting in the yard reading a book. My favorite book is Paradise Lost. Miri called me for dinner, and I lifted my head to jump up, but I could have sworn, standing ahead of me in a perfect straight line were all three members of the Fairview family. Mother, her head cocked at an unnatural angle. Her stomach had been scooped out. Father, half of his face ripped off. And brother, the back of his head was gone, his body swaying from side to side, but he was smiling at me. A wide skeletal grin. And I remembered his static voice in my head. I've got it. Alyssa, look at me. We can get out of here. But I need you to trust me, okay? Here's what I want you to do. Something ice cold ran down my spine, and I jumped up, taking slow steps back. The Fairview family stopped shuffling towards me, twisted around and disappeared into the dark. Freddie Fairview paused, slowly inclining his head. He seemed to stare at me for a long time. His grin growing wider, more horrific, before turning and following the others. I watched their figures get further and further away. My heart lodged into the back of my throat. Something tells me they'll be back. Activated or not, I think the remnants of my family want Sunny Fairview back. I'm leaving Miri's safe house tonight. I'm terrified of staying here. I can't put the other survivors in danger. Hell, I really liked his stripy backpack. That's the end of the story. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, I'd love it if you liked the video if you're on YouTube, and subscribe, or leave a comment letting me know your thoughts on this story, wherever you are. I do appreciate you listening, and I want to thank my patrons for helping make this episode possible once again. If you'd like, you can come hang out in our Discord. It's pretty chill, but we would love to see you there to come say hi and let us know what you're up to. And if you fancy yourself a writer, and you'd like to send me your story, head over to storiesaftermidnight.com. where you can find a link to submit your story. So I really appreciate you for being here. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next one.